times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you're done pairing your baby. What's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the cops on the looters and pie throwers. They call it class war, I call it co-conspirators.
This is Resonance 104.4 FM. On the Circle Day show this week is artist Kerry Reihart. Am I pronouncing it okay?
Yeah.
Kind of?
Kerry Reihart.
Reihart, thank you. Kerry has been involved in community and public art projects for over 15 years. She's designed and consulted on large-scale mosaic murals, celebrating with local communities. Kerry is a self-titled craftivist who works from a mosaic-covered HQ, the treatment rooms in West London. Her work blurs the boundaries between craft and activism, using the craft techniques of mural, mosaic and screen printing to create intricate, highly politicised works of art. Hello.
Hello.
Nice.
Hi.
To see you. Let's start with the first question. What made you want to become an artist, and what's your journey been up until you set up your studio, the treatment rooms in West London?
That's quite a long, it could take the whole show to explain that journey. I didn't set out to be an artist. I never said I want to be an artist. And to be honest, I've really struggled for years with even being able to own that word and say I was an artist. I was actually incredibly insecure. I think I kind of, for me, I discovered that creativity was the one thing that I needed for my mental state to be able to be all right. I mean, I drifted into the arts and into theatre, did A-levels, and I was going to go and do theatre design, and I was doing an art foundation at Kingston Polytechnic, but just before I did it, I was sexually assaulted on the way home. I was beaten up. I had a complete nervous breakdown. I tried to kill myself, and I ended up at Foundation College about to study theatre design. And I think that I was so emotionally fragile that I kind of ended up drifting into the fine art department. And when I have my portfolio from that period of time, and when you look back at it, every single piece I did was just me trying to deal with all the emotions and deal with my state of mind for that period of time. And I think really that's been the story of my life. I've used art and creativity as a vehicle just to deal with my own states of mind and keep myself sane in a really what I consider a very insane world.
And you've said you're an anarchist, so am I. So is the show, yes. And what does anarchism mean to you?
To me, it's just a personal philosophy. It means I believe in no gods and no masters. I believe it's kind of a utopia in a world where we would work together collectively and make decisions. As far as I can see, I don't think that governments or heads of states or kings or queens do a terribly good job. They're not protecting our planet. They're not redistributing the wealth. They're not taking care of us as a population. So I have a belief that if we were to get rid of them and come together collectively and make decisions where we were all equal, that we would have a much better chance of saving the planet and having a better, fairer life.
Yes. What do you make of the current political climate, and what role do you think artists play in the resistance to injustice?
Well, I think at the moment it's absolutely terrible where we're going. I think, you know, we can see that, you know, we talk about heading back towards Victorian times, but we really are seeing it now with the rise of kind of diseases that you used to get due to overpopulation. We can see with the housing crisis. We can see with what's happening with disabled people, people on benefits. You can see that the way we're going, I think they actually have set up a workhouse somewhere. You know, you can see that at the moment, the disparity between the rich and the poor is getting more and more intense. And on top of that, you can see climate disaster. It's happening. I know that Charlotte Church was vilified for going on Question Time and saying that Syria might actually have something to do with climate disaster. Well, it does. They've had the worst droughts there for years and years. And if that pushes people to move, that pushes civil war. I think you can see what's happening in Indonesia, say, where there are fires raging out of control created by the by the mass production of palm oil, and yet our papers are filled with whoever Jeremy Corbyn bowed low enough, you know. So, you know, it fills you with despair, you know, when you know on the one hand that we're looking at the extinction of not only most of, you know, extinction of the human race, I'd say, and yet on the other hand you have a propaganda media that is just filling people with kind of, you know, I think, you know, scaring people to death with what, you know, could any kind of an alternative to austerity and to like renewable energy and things like that. I mean, I do personally, I worry a great deal. I've got 3 kids and I wonder what they're going to, what lives they've got.
What we're leaving them with.
Well, I don't understand how anyone's supposed to leave college 60 grand in debt and not ever be able to live in, ever afford to buy a house. You know, there's no social housing. We're getting rid of it in London. It's becoming acute. It's, you know, I don't see how my children are ever going to stay living close to me unless they live with me, which I think is probably what this government wants. Massive overcrowding where the only people who live in London are those who service the super rich.
Absolutely, yes. A show called Disobedient Objects was held at the V&A, which was excellent. The exhibition was the first to examine the powerful role of objects in movements for social change. It demonstrated how political activism drives a wealth of design, ingenuity and collective creativity that defy standard definition of art and design. You had a number of works in this exhibition. What was the experience of having such an anti-establishment theme in an institution such as the V&A?
It was amazing. I mean, partly the 2 curators of that show, Gavin Grindor and Catherine Flood, I have the utmost respect for them. You know, they are totally people of integrity and they really tried their hardest to make sure that that show was as authentic and as really as thought-provoking as they can. I mean, that show's just transferred to Australia and actually one of the pieces was censored. The one piece that was censored, funnily enough, is a fake newspaper, a kind of class war newspaper that shows, has Murdoch, Rudolf Murdoch on it, and it says Murdoch fucks donkeys, which was banned in Australia because, of course, Murdoch's company has money invested in this museum. And so that was the one piece that wasn't allowed. And I mean, and that sounds outrageous unless you consider the stuff about, you know, Cameron, you know. But anyway, but yeah, so I mean, and if you think of the work that they actually allowed me to exhibit, I mean, I had the Tiki Love Truck in there, which was my piece about the death row. And but on top of that, they would let me do ceramic installations outside the Victoria and Albert Museum. So they let me write whatever I wanted on the steps of the V&A and to make 2 mosaic panels that went either side. And, you know, I deliberately made them to have as many kind of controversial viewpoints as possible and to be a kind of a voice for the people, because it was all made up of hundreds of protesters holding placards. So I was able to cover all different protests and things. But yeah, it was an amazing experience.
I think it was very interesting to see the place transformed, really, because usually it's, well, not usually, but it tends to be a bit of a stale kind of boring, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they atmosphere. They were lovely. They invited me to sit in on the design meetings. So for the year and a half, I went to the V&A and I was in the process of how they developed that show. So I'm very aware of how sensitive they were and even how they presented the objects. They didn't want to present them in this kind of, oh, we're the V&A and it's precious in a box. They wanted to present them in a way that everything was very considered for that show. But also in that show were 2 out of the 99 objects of disobedient objects. Mine was the Tiki Love Truck, but there were 2 other that were directly related to me. One was a piece of jewellery that said, fuck the law, that was given to my 11-year-old daughter when she went to visit Herman Wallace. Herman Wallace was a political prisoner and a Black Panther who'd spent 41 years in solitary confinement in Louisiana State Penitentiary. So he's one of the Angola Free. Robert King is the other member. He's been exonerated. And Albert Woodfox still remains 40 years later in solitary confinement. Herman, tragically, was found not guilty and then released and only lived for 2 days in the real world as a free man. but Albert Woodfox remains. So my daughter went to visit him when she was 11 at Louisiana State Penitentiary, and he sent us a piece of jewellery that says "fuck the law." So that's in that, in the disobedient objects. And then there's a pendant that says "Free Zulu," that was my friend Kenny Zulu Whitmore. He was making and selling to provide finances for him. But he's in his 40th year as well at Louisiana State Penitentiary, and a very good friend of mine and a real revolutionary brother. Mm. So I'd suggest anyone to go look him up, Kenny Zulu Whitmore.
Mm. And so you mentioned a little bit of the, one of your pieces, the Tiki Love Truck, and it's the title of a striking artwork you've created, which you've exhibited in many places, not just the V&A. I always notice it every time I see it, you know, I'm like, oh yes, it's here. There's an incredible story about this piece, like you've talked about it a little bit just now, but can you tell us about the formation of the piece? And I suppose you said what's inspired you, but more.
Well, yeah, well, the backstory is in 2000 I was a community artist, and I picked up a big issue. In the big issue, it had an advert in the back to join Human Rights, which was a humane organisation to befriend people on death row. So I, at that time, I thought I probably could write to someone on death row, and so I put myself forward for it, and I became friends with a guy called Luis Ramirez, and for 5 years he became my best friend. He was tragically executed. I went to see him just before he was murdered, and I did a huge mural on the back of my house because my whole house is mosaic. So I spent a year making a mosaic in memory of him. And the guy in the cell next to him was a guy called John Joe Amador, Ash for short. And his wife's twin sister became pen pals with Lewis. So we became friends because they were there when I went to visit Lewis just before he was executed. And then I became friends with them, and I became friends with Ash. Then 2 years later, I was awarded a commission by Walk the Plank to make the Tiki Love Truck, a mosaic truck that would parade through the streets of London and hand out messages of love. So I had this commission to do this truck, but just as I got the commission, I was told that Ash had a date for execution, and his wife Linda asked me if I would be witness and come and support her through this execution. So my whole world is traumatized, and I'm like trying to mosaic a truck, and I just suddenly thought, you know what, I'm going to make this truck for Ash, so we will put his name on it and decorate it. At the same time, I'm friends with a guy called Nick Reynolds. Nick Reynolds' father is Bruce Reynolds, the great train robber. He's also well known because he's in Alabama Free, the kind of cult band. He's the harmonica player, but he's a good friend of mine. And we were actually on a band called Sick Note, had hired a boat to go up and down the Thames to celebrate Tony Blair's last day in office. We were trying to recreate the old Sex Pistols scene.
That's
but
brilliant.
We're all on a boat, all mashed up, celebrating Blair getting out of office. And my friend Nick is an expert on death masks. That's what he does. He makes death masks. And he said, I hear you're going to see your friend be executed. Do you think there's any way I could come with you and we could make a death mask of him? And I was like, yeah, maybe we can, because I know the family, we'll talk. And so it was arranged. He decided to come with us. And unbelievably, Texas is the only state in America that legally you can transport a dead body if you have your own body bag. And so we used this.
Yes.
So I went, I saw my friend be executed. And then afterwards, within minutes, we'd hired out a car. We collected the body and we drove in a convoy to some woods, to this cabin that Linda and Lisa had hired out. And we took the door down and put it between two camp beds and took Ash in there. And Nick did the death mask. I assisted him. And you have to understand that Texas is a non-contact prison. So it means from when Ash went in to when he was executed, when he was murdered by the state, no one had ever touched him except prison guards. It's totally non-contact. That's when you see
no
the
hugs, nothing.
Nothing. That's why when you see photos of people with their hands touching on glass in death row, it's because that's the closest you can get to anyone. So, you know, no one had touched him. When he was executed, the priest just holds their leg as they're being murdered. So we got his body, and it's really unusual to get a body within minutes of someone dying, because normally there's always autopsies. But I have his death certificate that says homicide on it. So, you know, they were pretty truthful about it. So we picked up this body, took him in the car, took him to some cabins and made a death mask of him. And if you see it, it looks like he has stubble, but it doesn't. It was goosebumps because his skin was actually reacting to the plaster because he'd only just died. Mm. So it was really weird. You know, it was, you know, I think it's hard for a lot of people to get their heads around. And the thing is that Ash knew. So for the last hour, just before they killed him, he has a phone call and he was talking to us and he said, oh my God, you know, a death mask, that's usually bestowed on kings. I can't believe you came all this way for me. Now I know I'm not trash. Now I know I'm somebody. Mm. And he said, you know, if I have to die and if I can be used, if you can somehow, my death can be used to just try to change people's opinions about the death penalty, then so be it. And so we did. We made this mask of him. We then had to put him back in a car and drive him across state and take him to a morgue. And I can tell you, it may be legal to transport bodies. It's not legal to play around with them in cabins late at night in the deep south. I mean, it was a truly, you know, scary road trip. But yeah, we took him, brought this death mask back. 8 days later, Ash's head is on the top of the Tiki Love truck and it's parading through the streets of Manchester with 45,000 people cheering. So for me, I think that's kind of proper magic. That's like making a deity, you know. And so we did. We used to drive the Tiki Love truck to all the festivals, like you said, you've seen it. We would drive it all around. It would be our kind of mosaic moving museum to Ash. And then the V&A asked for it to be in this show. And the reason it was in the show really was because it was the ultimate thing to show how one could protest in death.
Mm. It definitely stands out anyway. Am I right in saying it was filmed?
Yeah.
This journey was filmed?
No, we filmed ourselves doing the whole of it. So in the V&A show and in the show in Australia, there is a 3-minute film that shows you us making all of the death mask and the whole story.
Mm. Okay. And can you talk about the two pieces you've had at the V&A? So history is a weapon and power to the people, and it, like you said, it was at the entrance.
They were the two panels. They asked me, the director of the V&A basically at the very last minute decided he wanted outside the V&A to highlight the fact that this show was going on inside, and the curators had to talk to him, and you know, he wanted to kind of something to stand out, but they were really wanted to have something that was genuine, that had some integrity. And the Catherine suggested that it should be me and that I should do a ceramic intervention, because I do ceramic interventions. It would be a genuine thing for me to do. But the funny thing is they only gave me 1 month. I was literally on my way to Glastonbury, where they said to me, she said, would you like to put in for this proposal? If you come up with one in 48 hours, it will be on the director's desk. So I was like, oh my God, this is a dream come true. So 48 hours of not working, handed in this proposal to write what we wanted on the steps and to have these two ceramic panels. And they agreed. Mm. So But that gave me 1 month. I had 1 month to actually get through all the designs with the V&A, to get it past all their kind of health and safety and building requirements, to get it made, to get it installed. It was absolutely, I had to call on everybody I know. And at the time I was going through a terrible acrimonious split up with my partner. I didn't have the use of my studios. We were working in my kitchen on these huge panels. But because I have such a great group of people, fellow activists that I work with, they came together and helped me do it.
Mm, amazing. And how did the show go down in Australia and Sydney, the Disobedient Objects?
Yeah, it was great. It was really, really good. It was so nice to go over there. I think you have to travel yourself to really fully realise that wherever you go, it's same, same, different. People have the same concerns, the same worries. You know, whatever the media is showing you is not necessarily what the case is. I met the most loveliest people who had the same concerns as me, that were trying in the same way to use art as a vehicle to try and, you know, push forward a social agenda and help people to challenge authority.
So the response was good. That's good. Who are some of the artists that inspire you, past and present, and why do they inspire you?
I think one of my all-time favourite artists is Sylvia Pankhurst. I mean, everyone always talks about Emily Pankhurst and Christabel Pankhurst, but actually Sylvia Pankhurst is the woman, I think, you know, she's the one that's been forgotten in history. She was actually the graphic designer and an amazing artist who actually chose not to do art because she was so motivated to want to do help, you know, move forward the suffragette movement. But she came up with all the beautiful designs. And I think it's really interesting that you know, all of those ideas about making medals and subverting things. I think Sylvia Pankhurst can almost be seen as, you know, such an amazing craftivist of her time, because if you think about all the way that the suffragettes played around with things, they used to give out medals to each other and award each other sashes and did all those. They kind of took on all the pomp and ceremony of the time and played around with it, which, if you think about it, these are women that weren't supposed to, like, speak in public. You know, if you think about what those women were, their position, to actually go around handing out each other medals for being in prison and stuff is truly revolutionary. So Sylvia Pankhurst was the real unsung hero, I think, of all of the suffragettes, and I love her. Emery Douglas, who's the Minister of Culture of the Black Panther Party, I love his work. I love the fact that, you know, he's still now a revolutionary artist working with his community, trying to do good work. When I was at college, my degree was in 89, and the Guerrilla Girls had just hit the scene in 85. So they were really influential on me. When I was at art college, I was very into feminist art. Barbara Kruger, Jenny Hulse, the Guerrilla Girls. And it was interesting because they were also featured in the Disobedient Objects show. So my truck is opposite the Guerrilla Girls. For me, it doesn't get any better than that. I'm, you know, alongside my artistic cultural heroes. And I think they're really revolutionary too. If you think about what they were doing, you know, predates all this Banksy stuff or street art. They were playing around with billboards long before anybody.
Yep. And you did a piece of Sylvia Pankhurst, didn't you? I've seen it on your website, have you?
It's not of Sylvia Pankhurst, unfortunately. Okay. I wish it was. It's of another suffragette called Mary Bamba. That's now in the Museum of Liverpool.
Okay, it's very beautiful. Yes, and I think she was probably the most radical, actually, in the suffragette. Maybe that's why she's kind of an unsung hero compared to her sister.
Sylvia Pankhurst, of course she is, because Sylvia Pankhurst had a baby out of wedlock with an Italian anarchist, and during the war was against the war. I mean, she went and lived in Ethiopia and is the only non-Ethiopian ever to be awarded a state funeral. I mean, she was fighting the good fight. She moved. You have to understand that her sister and her mother really only wanted the vote for rich women.
Yes.
They'd dropped out of trying to fight for suffrage when they had it. They went on to try and be Tory MPs or something. Sylvia Pankhurst moved herself to the East London and spent an entire lifetime trying to help people less fortunate than
herself.
Working
class people. And she was anti-monarchy as well, wasn't she?
She's a total babe. They should be making a film about her.
Yeah, that would be great. What shows do you currently have coming up? And also, like, on now, because I think you are...
Well, no, this Friday, there's the Modern Panic show opening at the Apillary Studios in Hackney. Don't ask me for the address. Look it up, Modern Panic. That's always an amazing show of really, you know, subversive... Not just subversive, but surreal, underground. You know, it's really a lot of cool artists in that show that push boundaries, that's always worth checking out. I'm also with Artcore at the London Walls, London Street Walls Gallery over in Latimer Road. Mm-hmm. There's a group show opening there in December. Again, it's always a good show of an amazing lineup of artists.
And what's your website?
Please. My website is rubbish, but it's www.carryreihart, which is reichardt.com. But I would also try and Google the Treatment Rooms Collective,
yes,
who are also as rubbish as me at self-promotion and social networking. But, you know, if you're determined, you'll find something out about us.
And you're on Twitter a lot as well, which is good.
Yeah, I do Instagram too. I like Instagram.
I need to follow you on there. I'm not done that yet. Great, so we've run out of time.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
It's been an honour to have you on the show. It's your first time on Resonance as well, so
yes.
Kudos to me. Thank you, Carrie, for being on the show. You've been listening to the Circle Day show on Resonance 104.4 FM. Next week will be Donica with another special guest. For all the shows, go to www.thecircleday.com. If you like the show and me and Donica, go, and you want a T-shirt, go to subcat.com. Till next week, turn on, tune in and kick off.
Through the best of times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you don't parry. Yo, baby, what's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the cops on the looters and pie throwers. They call it class war, I call it co-conspirators. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks